The goal tonight is to shut down Pat Connaughton. He's the key to their team.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Only four games on Tuesday in the NBA. We're going to talk about all of those, cover the injuries, and then preview a big 10-game slate for Wednesday. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
Including injuries that have happened, I'm going to talk about a couple of guys recovering from injuries as well. That'll be coming up soon. So you'll hear my takes on Bogdan Bogdanovic and Derek White, who, and also Damari Carroll, I guess, who is not too far away from returning to action. Let's start, though, as we always do, with...
Monstrous line of the night.
Yes, the monstrous line of the night goes to CJ McCollum of the Portland Trailblazers. McCollum was electric, especially in the second half. He ended with 40 points in the Blazers' big win over the Bucks. 5 triples, 5 rebounds, 6 assists and 4 steals, and shot absolutely fantastically. 65%, 17 of 26 from the field. Now, I talked about how he'd been a disappointment so far this season. I did that little video out on YouTube, which for those of you listening on the podcast, you'll hear that segment dropped in later on, talking about buy low, sell high type of guys. And I said McCollum's numbers were going to increase because his shooting was well down. The other thing that was well down for him before today were his steal numbers and his assist numbers, but he got those back flowing in today's contest. And again, the two-point percentage was well up in today's game after being considerably down prior to today. I still don't think McCollum's ever going back to that top 35 guy that he was for a couple of years, 15, 16, 16, 17. More of a guy that ends up outside the top 50 with a decline in the overall efficiency, but more importantly, a decline in the assist numbers, which prior to today had been pretty stark, but a really strong performance from CJ today to get this big victory for the Blazers. The first time he has gone over 4 assists all season, and only his second multiple steal game. Granted, they've come in back-to-back games. He's had 6 steals combined in his last 2 games, but it's worth noting nonetheless, not a high steal guy throughout his career really at all, and that had been the case this season up until today, really.
Waiver wire line of the night.
That goes to his teammate, Evan Turner of the Portland Trailblazers. Another 32 minutes for Turner. No Mo Harkless, who's still dealing with this knee injury. Turner looks a completely different player this season as opposed to what we've seen the last couple in Portland. He looks more like Boston Evan Turner, not Indiana Evan Turner, more like Boston Evan Turner. 16 and 11 with 4 assists. He even hit 2 triples and he had a steal. He is running the second unit. He's averaging over 4 assists per game and a steal, but he's shooting the absolute lights out from 2-point range anyway. 52% overall, always been a mid-40s guy. 57% on his twos, that's likely to come down. Not hitting the threes at all, 25% there, even though he did hit two now. But 10.5, 5.5, and 4 with a steal, there's some value there. It's not really high upside by any means, because again, when Harkless comes back, he loses a little bit, and he's probably performing up to his best at this stage. It's really more of a 14-team league guy, Evan Turner, but he'll have these nights on low-volume days like today, adding a guy, streaming a guy like Turner, who can give you those 4 or 5 assists, who can help you with a little bit of scoring, who can rebound the ball. But this is clearly his best performance of the season, and yeah, I wouldn't be reading a huge amount into it. But there can be some value. It's just more for 14-team formats than your standard 12-team formats. For a guy who is rostered in under 5% of leagues, it is your deep league of the night player, deep leaguer of the night, and it goes to Bill Hernangómez of the Charlotte Hornets. Hernan Gomez only played the 16 minutes as the backup to Cody Zeller, but was super efficient. Didn't miss a shot. 2 of 2 from the field, 4 of 4 from the free throw line, 9 points, 9 rebounds. He hit a 3. He had a block. He had 2 steals as well. A great game from Hernan Gomez. He looks to be back in the rotation ahead of Bismack Biyombo, where he had lost that spot for a game or two, but he's just not getting enough playing time. I thought we could be looking at a 22-minute split between he and Cody Zeller. He's only getting 14 minutes per night, averaging 7 and 6. Lack of defensive numbers there, but hitting threes at an extraordinary rate again, 57%, which is due to come down. The efficiency is through the roof here for Hernan Gomez, 58 and 85 as his two percentages. but just not enough playing time. The 32nd ranked player in per 36 fantasy value, averaging 18-4 with over a steal or a steal and a half and 1.2 blocks and that great efficiency, just getting to those minutes. I don't think that he is ever going to get to that, but he is a nice 20-team league guy, barely outside the top 150, 18-teamer, 16-teamer. Hopefully he can just maintain at least this 15 or 16-minute role off the bench and not go back to that splitting time with Bismack Biyombo, which was happening there for a while, much to my chagrin. Guys, the Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things over on Twitter and on Instagram. Go and follow us on both accounts, Locked On NBA Net. On Twitter, you get all of the Locked On Podcast Network local hosts covering their team on one feed. It's amazing during the games, any breaking news, injury reports. The hosts of these shows will tweet that information out and it will go all through that one feed. And on Instagram, Locked On NBA Net is giving you the biggest stories of the day in just 1 minute in the Instagram stories function of that app. They're giving you longer cuts on the biggest stories of the day in their regular IG feed. So make sure you're following Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Instagram. Let's move on to the next award.
Young Gun of the Night.
It is Kevin Huerta of the Atlanta Hawks, with the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince sitting this one out. It was Huerta who moved into the starting lineup. I know Tim Bontemps, who was on this podcast a few weeks ago, congrats to you, Tim, on getting the gig over at ESPN now as well, was really high on Huerta, thinking he is going to be a starter this season when the Hawks do move on from Kent Bazemore. But it was Prince today who was out. Huerta started, and I thought he dealt with it pretty well. I thought he handled himself nicely. 32 minutes. Only the 7 points, low usage, 9.5%. But you want a guy who can contribute in multiple areas when the shots aren't coming his way. And Huerta can do this. A guy who had pretty good rebound and assist numbers in Maryland. He added it here. Well, let's go through his line. 7 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block. Really filling up the box score there. We don't know if Prince is going to play on Wednesday, so Huerta could be in line for another option, but with 10 games on Wednesday, streaming him in probably isn't the greatest idea. But it's worth noting that the ability for him to contribute in multiple areas, he has now had 3 games this season in his minimal minutes where he has had at least 3 assists, which for a small forward type player and a rookie small forward, it is pretty impressive to see Huerta doing that. He is he's shooting 42% from three as a rookie, which is an excellent start. What he really comes in with there, averaging nice steal numbers per 36, strong rebounds, strong assists, pretty good blocks, hitting threes. The numbers look nice at the moment for Huerta. So maybe if he falls out of the collective consciousness in the next couple of games, consider him for even your, say, 14 or 16 team leagues, but really pay attention to him in dynasty formats, because I think we're going to see a top 120, maybe top 100 finish to this season for Huerta once he does get into that starting lineup permanently, likely at the expense of Kent Bazemore, who I would assume will be moving on at some point from this Atlanta Hawks team. Let's go to the dud of the night. It goes to Malcolm Brogdon of the Milwaukee Bucks. Brogo played 27 minutes and he was poor. 4-3-4, no steals, no blocks. He had the 000. The shooting wasn't there for Brogo either. He is obviously locked in as that starting shooting guard on this team. He is the 110th ranked player so far, 12-4-3.5. The shooting is fine, but is there any upside with this guy at all? I literally don't see any sort of upside. Low usage guy who is not generating steal numbers, although that will come up, 0.4 per game only. That will increase. 3.6 assists is fine. He is not the same guy he's not in the same role that we saw from him when he was a rookie of the year and a top 70 guy over the second half of that season. I just don't see that happening for Brogdon. So in a 10-team league, he is not a guy that you need to hold. And in 12s, it's really up and down. Now, if a guy, one of these injury return guys, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Derek White, if these guys are available, I would feel okay dropping Brogdon there, because I think the upside of both Bogdanovic and White is higher than what Brogdon's is. Now, Brogdon might be more solid than him, but under any circumstance outside of injury, how can you see Brogdon really jumping ahead of what he's doing here, that the 12-4-3.5? Like when you go, oh yeah, he's just got to get it together, because he's shooting 49%. He hasn't missed a single free throw. He's hitting 42% of his threes. Like there's no discrepancy there in his shooting. Now the steals are low, so that can come up. The assists are at a pretty decent rate. It's just that this is his limit in this offense, I believe, or pretty close to it. and I'd like to grab one of those other guys. Now, I might regret that by making that move, and Brogdon's not a surefire drop by any means, and you probably do have someone worse on your roster, and that probably goes more for 10-team leagues than 12-team leagues. But I don't know. This is the sort of thing that bothers me with him from a fantasy point of view. I think he's solid enough as an NBA player, an NBA starter. I just don't see that the upside is really there for him this season very much at all. The plus-minus GOATs, Bill Hernangómez had the largest net rating, plus 115.9, while the lowest net rating, shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, Ryan Anderson, who started for God knows what reason, a negative 83.4. I just have absolutely zero idea what he and Jamal Crawford are actually doing on that team. And Trevor Ariza, you could lump in there as well, which I'll talk about a little bit later on. But Ryan Anderson was your negative GOAT of the day. Let's go on and talk about the injuries. Evan Fournier is questionable for Wednesday with an ankle injury. He finished out the game against the Cavs, hit the game-winning three, so I don't think it's going to be too severe. But with John Isaac already ruled out, you're going to be seeing a lot of John Simmons and a shitload of Terry Ross, so bear that in mind for Wednesday. Bogdan Bogdanovic, I've mentioned his name a couple of times already. He is he's a chance to be back for Wednesday's game, for tomorrow, today, whatever time you listen to this. Otherwise, he'll likely be back on the Kings' next game across the weekend. He is going to be slow going for Bogdan to begin this season, but I do think that he is a fairly clear top 100 guy for this season. And a lot of people, the standard questions, is Bogdanović going to hurt Buddy Hield? Do I drop Nemanja Bjelica for Bogdanović coming back? And to me, these things can all work together mutually exclusively. Now, maybe some of those shots that Hield is getting can go to Bogdanović. Maybe some of them that Bjelica is getting can go to Bogdanović, but they're not thriving on 40% usage Lou Williams style. Remember who is manning the small forward spot for the Kings. It's Iman Shumpert and Justin Jackson. Yogi Ferrell is in the rotation. Troy Williams is getting 12 minutes a night. There are plenty of minutes for Bogdanović to come in there and get back to his 30 minutes per night. It doesn't require Bjelica, who is not playing a single second of small forward, and it doesn't require Hield, who is also not playing really any small forward at all, a marginal amount, to sacrifice much at all. Hield and Fox have been fantastic this season, so is Bjelica. Bogdanović has an argument as the best player on this team. He was solid enough as a rookie, 12 points, 3 assists, 2 threes, shot 39% from 3 in only 28 minutes. That should start to push up for 31 minutes. Now, it will be rough going for him to begin the year. As he eases back in, minutes will be low, and you'll be frustrated, no doubt about that. But I believe he needs to be grabbed in 12 and probably in 10-team leagues as well. Slammin' Sammy Decker for the Cleveland Cavaliers. He is out for the next 2 to 4 weeks with that ankle sprain. A lot of people hoping that this is the chance for Larry Nance. But remember, Nance just has not played power forward at all this season. They are already down Kevin Love. They are now down Decker. So yeah, logic would say, well, they have to put Nance in there. And I would agree that irrespective of injuries, they have to put Nance in there. They just should be playing him. Larry Drew is being a complete numbnuts at this point. But let's look at it this way. Tristan Thompson getting a shit ton of those center minutes. And then when Decker went down, it was J.R. Smith, the plumber, who moved into that power forward spot. Now, Smith probably doesn't start as the power forward, but when Love was out for the first game, who started? It was Channing Frye. So, don't be shocked if Channing Frye comes in, has an 18-minute start, and then J.R. Smith and David Nwaba mop up the backup minutes with maybe Nance getting one or two. I don't think that Larry Nance has played a single second next to Tristan Thompson this season. While I'm talking, I'm going to look this up. Because they just have not used him as a power, which is fair enough, because I don't really think he is a power forward, and that front court of Nance and Thompson in terms of lack of shooting would be an absolute disaster paired with some of the other guys they've got, like Chetty Osman, who's struggling with his shot as well. So I don't see that as being a great pairing. Of course, Nance should be getting these minutes over Thompson, but he is clearly not. Let's have a look. He has played, I've got these numbers up, 3 minutes, 34 minutes... He's played 4 minutes all season next to Tristan Thompson, has Larry Nance. So, yeah, really, really small amount of time there for those guys together in a lineup. So, yeah, look, I'm not... And Nance, maybe it gives you one game of pause on dropping Nance because I just hate the way he's being used. But my hope for it is not high. Bob Cove's dealing with a back injury. He is questionable for Wednesday. I don't think it's anything too serious, but he did take a hard fall in a game a couple of days ago, so that's probably to do with that. While Derek White, the other guy who we thought was a real sleeper heading into the season for the San Antonio Spurs, he has been weirdly out of absolutely nowhere upgraded to probable with this foot injury, this plantar fascia problem that's kept him out of the start of the season. Bryn Forbes has been starting a point guard. Forbes is not good. Forbes is not a starting caliber point guard. He is not a point guard, full stop. And White should be able to slot into that role. Now, I don't think that Des White will slot into the starting lineup for game one. And I think it'll be slow going as he goes in at 18, 19 minutes per night. But he should be pushing up close to 27 or 28. He is a really, really strong shot blocker as a point guard. Just gets those blocks at a pretty significant level. Blocked 1.5 shots per 36 for the G League last season. Really good shot blocker, can get assists, efficient scorer, and I think he has got a shot at being a top 100 guy. Now, priority-wise, I have him behind Bogdan Bogdanovic as guys to add off the waiver wire, but if you've got Forbes, it's an easy swap to go grab White. It is as simple as anything. Pat Mills, it's an easy swap to go do that. Sam Decker, it's an easy swap. If you've got someone like Mitchell Robinson, I'd probably go and do that, especially for Bogdan Bogdanovic. I'd make that move. Ali Okobo, it's an easy swap. McCall Bridges, it's an easy swap for these guys, in my opinion. So I would go and add White. I really like what he can do. It might take a bit of time. We are talking about maybe a month or so away from getting full minutes. But I'm interested to see what he can do. And then on the Spurs point of view, Pau Gasol and Rudy Gay are both out for Wednesday's game. Gasol with that foot soreness, so that should reintroduce Jakob Poeltl back into the rotation after he has missed the last couple. If your company is looking for a new way to reach customers, you could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male, higher educated, higher earning than your traditional media audience. So have your company sponsor this podcast. Email me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. All right, let's go into these games now and talk about them in a little bit of extra detail. There's only four of them, and there wasn't a huge amount to really go through with the action that that did go down. So let's talk about them anyway, of course, because that's what we do on this show. The first game we look at is the Atlanta Hawks and the Charlotte Hornets. No Prince, so a big game from Kent Bazemore. 16 points, but it was the defense. 4 steals and 2 blocks. Of course, he does have to be rostered, but a drop-off is likely going to come. And Jeremy Lin put together another consistent night. 19 points, had foul trouble early on. That limited his minutes. 18 minutes overall, 2 assists and 2 steals. That's 3 consecutive strong games from Lin. And with how he is playing, it's more, I guess, mirroring what we expected from him to begin the season. So he is more of a 12-team watch list guy, but it is becoming a little bit interesting. 18 and 10 for Trae Young is nice. DeAndre Bembry just contributing across the board. Only the 5 points, wasn't his best night, but 6 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal, while The Undertaker and Alex Len continue to really hurt each other. 8 and 6 for The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman with 2 blocks, and then 12 and 3 for Len. Both of those are real fringe 12-team league players. On the Hornets, Kemba had 29 with 7 assists and 3 steals. A massive game from him. And Marvin Williams actually played well for once. 20 points in 27 minutes with 8 rebounds and 3 triples. He has been almost invisible this season, playing really limited minutes. I think some of his extra minutes in this one may have been due to the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist finger dislocation. Now, Kidd-Gilchrist was able to return to the game and played it out with no problems, but he played only 17 minutes, and Williams played better, but this is no indication to me that you need to grab Williams outside of, say, 16-team formats. Jez Lamb, Malik Monk, Miles Bridges, they continue to eat into each other's production. 13 points from Lamb, 13 points from Monk, 9 points for Bridges in 20 minutes per game. It's really hard to have any of these guys in 12-team formats. Lamb is most productive with the lowest upside out of this trio. It's going to require a trade, an injury, or a bold James Borrego decision for one of them to push up to 28 or 29 minutes, and that's not something that I think is going to be coming, so I think you can probably find better 12-team league guys than either of those three. For reference, I would happily drop Lamb or Monk for Bogdanovic or Derek White. I'm going to be dropping those names quite a bit into today's podcast. Not much else to talk. Batum was all right, 10 points with 4 assists in this game for the old Hornets as they get the victory, 113-102. The next game we look at, the Wizards, man, they are just a disaster. 100-119 against the Mavericks. They lose again, but for everyone having that doubt in Otto Porter, 38 minutes for Porter, 19 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and 5 triples. I talked about it so many times, he will not continue to be this piss poor in his shooting, and he went out and hit 5 of 6 from 3, and this is why you drafted him around that 40 to 50 zone. Well, that's where you should have been drafting him anyway. Never should have been dropped. Should always been expected to get back to that. Now, there is, you know, there has been some sort of issue with him and the team and freezing out and still under 15% usage, but contributing in all those areas. And once the shot starts going in, as it did today, the fantasy value will come back. So it was rocky, no doubt. But by now, listen to this show, you should know just to hold on to these guys because it will come around. Johnny Wall, 24, 4 and 10 with 3 steals, and Beal had 19 and 6. Dwight Howard, just so, 33 minutes, 8 and 11 for Dwight. Bad free throws, good field goal percentage. He is fine in 12-team leagues, but he's not for everybody with those discrepancies. While Markieff Morris almost had the dud of the night, 4 points in 22 minutes with 3 assists. I did worry pretty significantly about him heading into this season. I wasn't sure how the fit would go with Dwight. I'm still not sold on how it's going to go. At this point, he still is an okay 12-team league hold, but he's not the strongest. While Kelly Oubre, again, he is gone for Bogdanović. And Derek White, in my opinion, 6 points in 23 minutes for Cal. On to the Mavericks. The pencil Harrison Barnes, another one of those guys that I mentioned on that portion of the show, which you'll hear later on, or you may have seen the video, of guys who are underperforming. Barnes came out and played well, 19 and 13, shot pretty well as well, which had been really holding him back. Now, the rebounding is pretty high. I don't think he's going to be able to do this at this level, but he was always going to improve from where he was, which was outside the top 200 to start this season. Doncic had 23 and 6 because he is awesome, and Dennis Smith, 19, 4 and 7. I think Smith gets fairly poorly treated by some people in the Twitter sphere, in the NBA media. He is still learning things. He does make some mistakes. I still believe he's got pretty significant upside and should be a top 100 guy this season. 22 points for Wes Matthews with nothing else. 2 rebounds, 5 triples, nothing else there. Shot the ball well. Still, actually, in terms of on-court, is struggling, but the numbers are okay. He is not going to be a must-hold guy all season. Well, JJ Barea chimed in with his 8 assists. That's what he is good for as an assist streamer. That's really, realistically, about it for old Jose Juan. The next game we look at is the Brooklyn Nets and the Phoenix Suns. Caris LeVert, man, I picked 3 guys for my most improved player heading into the season. One of them was the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. One was Toby Harris, and the other was Caris LeVert. LeVert has to be the clubhouse leader, I'd say, at this point. 26 points, 3 triples, a steal, a block, 5 rebounds. He is the best player on this team easily, in my opinion. Killing it at the moment. There is going to be a fall-off in efficiency, a 63% shooter in today's game. But he is just so good, and he is showing it every single game now. People are worried that Damari Carroll returning is going to hurt LeVert. It shouldn't really impact him at all. This guy is the best player and will play, you know, significant minutes. He's the 39th ranked player so far. I think a push outside the top 50 is probably a little bit more realistic than expecting top 50 finish, but he's great. D'Angelo Russell, 15 and 6 in 27 minutes. That's fine. Dinwiddie had 12, 5 and 3 and shot the ball well, which he doesn't usually do. Again, nothing really to see there. Russell's the guy that you want over Dinwiddie, but Spencer still has that 12-team value, while a nice 10, 9 and 5 from Jarrett Allen. The blue swimmer, he's just bad, man. Allen Crabbe is not a 10, not a 12, not a 14-team league player, in my opinion. And the amount of questions rolling in about Rondae Hollis-Jefferson today, I have no idea what's going on with this guy. 13 minutes, 5 points. When he first came back a couple of games in, I said, I'm not sure what we're going to do here with Rondae. Will he remain a must-roster guy? And then he came out and had some better performances, but he's been up and down. And my major point when I talked about it is I didn't think his ceiling was actually high enough to label him a 100% must-roster guy at all times. I think that best-case scenario, he is the 100th best player this season, best maybe 90th, maybe he can get to that level, which is where he was last season. But will he be able to generate that same level of efficiency, the same level of playing time, and the same pecking order in the offense when Caris LeVert has clearly jumped ahead of him and wasn't at that spot last season? So I do worry about Rondae. In a 10-team league, I think you probably could move on. And in a 12-team, it is up and down. Now, I generally tend towards caution in most of my decisions. So yeah, I probably lean holding, but what do you make of this? 13 minutes, 5 points. But in saying that, the game before he had 21 points in 30 minutes. So it's not an automatic drop. Just as like that 21 points in 30 minutes is not, well, this is a forebearer of everything he's going to do this season, because it wasn't. He's just up and down. He's had three real turds out of his last 4, but 2 good ones out of his last 5. So it is hard to get a full grasp on what the hell is going on with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. On to the Suns. Just a disaster. Now, this team making efforts to say they were going to compete this year when A, they never should have thought that way, B, they were never going to, and I don't know who they were fooling, because they obviously fooled some fans, because I had a lot of Phoenix fans talking smack, man, we're good now, we're competing, man, we're pushing for that 8 seed. Like, you're not, you're nowhere near it, and you're bad, and the roster construction is bad. There is zero reason for Ryan Anderson to be playing. There is zero reason for Jamal Crawford to be playing. Now, Crawford played 4 minutes. He should never have been signed. Trevor Ariza is a signing that didn't make sense. He had 8 points in 31 minutes. I don't understand the point of these guys. Josh Jackson remains trash, and he is basically out of the rotation. 7 minutes for Jackson in four with 4 points. Not a 12, 10, 14, 16 team. And my worry about him for Dynasty is pretty well founded at this point. I just don't think he is going to be a good player. I don't know why Ryan Anderson played 22 minutes. He took one shot. He missed it. He had 2 rebounds and 2 assists, while TJ Warren played only 13 minutes. Missed all 5 of his shots. I think Warren's back might have been bothering him. I think in terms of Teej, he is a fringe 12-team league guy, but that's going to require 28 minutes. But if he's playing 22, then he won't be. The bright spot, though, not to go all negative, is Devin Booker had 20 points, struggled a lot with his efficiency, and he looked pretty pissed. He's not happy with this team and organization, that's pretty clear. Isaiah Kanan had 13, 3, and 4, and his minutes after his injury have gone up as opposed to going down, which I thought they would, so I got that one wrong. I thought Okobo could hold on to that starting spot, which he should, because they just should be developing and seeing what these guys can do, but that's not what Kokoschkov's doing. So Kanan is a fringe 12-team guy behind Bogdanovic, behind Derek White, though. And the other bright spot is Bridges, who played 28 minutes and needs to be getting these minutes over Trevor Ariza, over Ryan Anderson, over Josh Jackson. He's already taken it off Jackson, and of course, you know, him and Ariza can play together. We can see 30 of Bridges pretty comfortably, but there's just no need for this Anderson bullshit. Now, the other question that came at me thick and fast today is, do we add Rashawn Holmes? People love Dutch Ruddering Rashawn Holmes. They love it. I like Rashawn Holmes too, but he comes out and does one thing. Oh, he's an ad. It must add. Nah, man, I don't think so. 18 minutes, 13 and 10 with a steal and a block. It's bloody good. There's no doubt about that. That is a very, very good performance. 86% shooting. Let's tone that down a bit. 18 minutes a night. Will he be able to get that? I don't think so. He did play a couple of minutes next to DeAndre Ayton, so there's some encouragement there. He's more of a 14-team league guy and a guy you look at, but there are very few players who in 17 minutes a night can be considered must-roster 12-team league guys. And I don't think, and I don't think Holmes is one of them. It's just not enough playing time to do that. Now, 2% rostered on Yahoo is insanely low. 16s, 18s, 20s, and probably 14-team leagues, I'd be okay having a look at him there. But I'm not just rushing and grabbing him because he did have a big performance here for your standard formats. I just don't see that. DeAndre Ayton, the numbers are right, 15 and 13. I don't like him. I don't like him as a long-term star prospect. You've heard me talk about that before, Suns fans. Feel free to shit on me again here, as you love doing. I don't know. There's just something about his defense that really worries me. I've got no concerns in terms of this year and him losing minutes, but I think long-term, I think that's a real worry. And while he isn't Jahlil Okafor, clearly, he's also not David Robinson, as people were, you know, talking him up to be. And I do have real concerns about what it is for him long-term, but this is 3, 4, 5, 6 years down the track. Nothing to do with these first couple of seasons. But Josh Jackson has been, he's been found wanting for this team. Let's go on to the next one, the Bucks and the Blazers. The Blazers win 118-103. Brook Lopez knocked in 6 triples, 22 points. He should be rostered. While Yanni played 37 minutes, didn't close the game out because it was out of hand. 23-9-6, and Middleton had 22-8-6. Talked about Brogdon, stinker. Eric Bledsoe, a real turd. I talked about him in the buy-low section as well. 5 points on 12 shots. So that's due to come up, and his steal rate is comically low. So there is going to be a significant improvement for Bledsoe. He is a strong, strong buy-low to me, even after this performance. For the Blazers, it wasn't Lillard's best night, 13-3-6. It was CJ getting it done. I think you guys should feel relatively comfortable with dropping Zach Collins in 12-team leagues. He played 24 minutes, which was nice, but again, doesn't play next to Nurkic. 9-5. Nurk had 12-8-6. It just isn't going to be a consistent enough guy to be a 12-team league guy. Despite that hot start to the season, I think you should be considering moving on. Al-Farouq Aminu, the Chief.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Shit, yeah. 8-7 with 2 triples for in the old 32 minutes for the Chief, a 14-team league player. And that is probably about it for him. All right, guys, let's have a look at some buy low or sell high players, or another way of phrasing that, I guess, underperforming or overperforming players. Let's start with the guys who are currently underperforming. These are the player ranks over the last 2 weeks on a per game basis. We'll start with Jeff Teague, who is the 252nd ranked player. Then, as I said, this is a per game basis thing, so it's not to do with the fact that he's missed games due to injury. He is averaging only 28 minutes a game over those 3 games, 8 points with 6 assists. But there's considerable room for improvement here with Teague. You can expect probably another 3 to 4 minutes per game, maybe even 2 to 3 minutes per game extra. But he's shooting 27% over those last 3 games, including 18% from 3-point land. The assists are nice. The steals are about where they need to be. He's shooting well from the free throw line. It's just that he isn't hitting his shot, so we could expect a 15 to 18 percentage point rise in his field goal percentage, and a potentially even larger rise in his 3-point percentage. So the knee injury is a concern, dealing with that knee bone bruise, which could last one more game, it could last another 2 weeks. We're not sure, but if someone does drop Jeff Teague, I'd make the ad and see what happens from there. And he's going to get better than what he currently is. Another guy who is underperforming is the pencil, Harrison Barnes. 5 games for the season. 32 minutes a night coming back from that hamstring injury, so that's fine. But again, another guy underperforming with his shooting. 35% from the field, averaging 14-4. Now, I wasn't big on Harrison Barnes heading into this season, but I'm pretty sure he's going to be within the top 200 and probably in the top 150. I didn't agree with him being drafted at pick 70 or pick 80 years, as he was in some leagues, but he is going to be better than what he currently is. Reggie Jackson, another guy who is underperforming, the 218th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He is getting 31 minutes per night, but as a common refrain with all these guys, he is shooting poorly. Now, I gave shit to Dwayne Casey in the preseason when he called Reggie Jackson an excellent shooter, because he is quite clearly not a good shooter, but he's also not a guy who's going to continually go 34% from the field. He's shooting under 30% from three in these last 7 games, but the 15.7 points is still nice. He's not a high assist guy and he never gets steals, but we're going to see that efficiency rise back up to a degree. Not going to become super efficient, but he's going to be better than this. So again, if he was dropped, I would look to add Reggie Jackson. Gordon Hayward, another guy who's underperforming, only 25 minutes per game. He's the 211th ranked player, 9 points with 6 rebounds. Another guy whose shooting is way off, including his free throws. 67% from the line over the last 6 games. The minutes are still a concern. They will rise up, and I think we'll have top 50 Gordon Hayward from probably January on. So for now, don't look at this as an encapsulation of what Hayward is going to do for the remainder of the season. This is the lower end of what he's going to do. And if you can acquire him on a really interesting buy low type scenario, I would definitely be doing that. Jingle and Joe Ingles is 190th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. This is one who started off red hot, but like so many of these, and I talk about it all the time, is how shooting skews short-term rankings. 35% from the field from Ingles in the last 7 games, 60% from the line, and 32% from three. This is a guy who's shot over 44% from three each of the last 2 seasons, and that will bounce back up. It is a little bit of a rough patch here for Ingles over these last couple of games. He's still averaging almost 4.5 rebounds, almost 2 threes, 3.5 assists, and over a steal, but his shooting is uncharacteristically off. The free throws are well down this season. We're talking 20 percentage points lower than last season, and a real slump in his shooting at this point. Another guy whose shooting is off is Otto Porter Jr. of the Washington Wizards, the 176th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, only playing 26 minutes per night. He's dealing with his toe injury, but he is back today. 9 points, 3.5 rebounds, and 2 assists. And again, it's the shooting that's not there. This is a mid-40s percent guy from three. 33% he's hitting over the last 2 weeks. 43% from the field and 71% from the line. These are numbers which have got a significant room for improvement, as well as the minutes. Now, there's obviously an issue, a disconnect between him and Scott Brooks, so maybe he doesn't go back to a 33-minute role. His usage is always going to be low, but the efficiency is going to jump back up, and he should remain as a top 100 player pretty comfortably, so I'd be looking at him. I wouldn't be dropping him, and I'd be looking to acquire him if that offer came in and it was for the right amount. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince languishes outside the top 125, 126th exactly, in only 29 minutes per game. Foul trouble has really limited him over the last couple of weeks, and now he's dealing with an ankle injury. 12.7 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. The peripheral numbers are fine. Over 2 threes, the 5 rebounds, over 3 assists, the 1.2 steals, but it's the shooting. 33% on 12.5 attempts, also quite a lot of turnovers. The free throws are fine, 87%. He is going to be fine. He is going to jump back up. He is still, despite this struggle, the 61st ranked player over the course of the season. And once that shooting comes back up, and we're not talking about a guy who is expected to be a 47% shooter, get it to 42, get it to 43, hit mid-30s or upper 30s in your three-point percentage, and that jumps from outside the top 120 pretty comfortably back inside the top 70. Eric Bledsoe, another guy whose recent struggles are well documented, the 100th ranked player over the last 2 weeks in only 26 minutes per night, so that's a big factor. Your blowouts from the Bucks have contributed to lower minutes for a lot of the players. 13 points, 4.5 rebounds, but the 5.5 assists are right there. But the thing that's really impacting Bledsoe is last season he was significantly better at efficiency, field goal percentage and three-point percentage, but it's his steal numbers which is really letting him down. Now, he's still the 50th ranked guy for the season, but last year he was at 47 and 35% from the field and from three respectively. He's at 43 and 27 over the last 2 weeks, but last season he also averaged 2 steals per game. This year he's going at 0.8 for the season and at 0.5 over the last 6 games. So the steals, they're going to come. They might not get back to that 2 per game level, different defense, different focus, all that sort of stuff with Budenholzer. So perhaps it doesn't return to that 2 steals per game level, but I think the minutes are going to push back up. I think the efficiency is going to jump back up, and I think the steals are going to get better than what we've seen so far from Eric Bledsoe. The last guy on my underperforming list is CJ McCollum, a guy again who I wasn't big on hitting into the offseason or into this season, much like Harrison Barnes, but I do think he's going to be better than the 93rd ranked player, which is where he currently is over the last 2 weeks. In fact, that's been an improvement for CJ because over the course of the season, he is the 117th ranked player. But what's falling off for CJ? Well, it's efficiency-based stuff as usual, under 35% from three, under 43% from the field as well. It is starting to tick up over these last couple of games. But another thing that's interesting with McCollum is the role. He's not getting the assists like he was before, and I'm not convinced that that actually comes back, which could be a concern. I don't think he's coming back to being a top 50 player or anything along those lines, but he should be able to push himself into that top 100 and do that pretty comfortably. The guys who are overperforming over the last 2 weeks, Domantas Sabonis is the 36th ranked player. And whenever I throw these things out about players overperforming, I inevitably get the comments, oh, you're sleeping on this guy. Am I? Or am I just mentioning that I don't think he's going to continue to shoot 74% from the field, which is what he's done over the last 7 games, a highly unsustainable number. He also is 1 of 1 from 3 in that time. He's 86% from the free throw line, numbers which don't marry up to his career numbers. Now, he was 66 as a free throw shooter as a rookie, 75 last season, so maybe we can get another big jump up. But I feel pretty confident that he's not going to stick at 74% from the field. Good rebounder, the assists are nice, the defensive numbers are what they are, but there is going to be somewhat of a regression from Domantas Sabonis. Nemanja Bjelica, another guy who is playing fantastically, almost 16.6 rebounds and 3 assists, a block, 1.3 steals, nice, but 52% from 3, 55% from 2-point range, these numbers are probably going to change. Now, on the flip side, Bjelica's free throw percentage is at 68%, so he's got some room to improve there. This is not a guy who's noted as a bad free throw shooter. He shot 80% last season, 74% the year before that. So there's room to improve there. But he is also not because absolutely nobody is, he's not a 55% three-point shooter. So some sort of drop-off is going to come, as it is, I believe, with Pascal Siakam, who I did talk about on yesterday's show. 31 minutes a game over the last 2 weeks, a lot of those without OG Anunoby and Kawhi Leonard, or at least one of those two guys out. 14 and 8 with 1.7 steals. And again, it's coming on very high shooting. 63% from the field, including 74% from two. Only 9% of his threes because he remains a horrible three-point shooter. But there are some numbers there that are due for regression. I think the minutes come down 2 or 3 per game, and I think that that level of efficiency is not going to stick. He's not going to remain a 74% two-point guy. Last year, he was at 61%, the year before 52%, and I think that's a more realistic expectation that he can be a 60% two-point guy, a mid-50s to high-50s field goal guy, not a mid-60s player, and that steal rate is significantly elevated as to where it's been over the last 2 weeks. Steal rate is significantly elevated, and not because of the extra minutes, just on a per minute basis. It's way up there from where it's been in the past. Marcus Morris is the 50th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Surprise, surprise, because he's shooting 55% from three. That number is going to come down. His minutes are going to come down. He's averaging 27 minutes across the last 6 games as Gordon Hayward's minutes rise. And we even saw it last game. Morris was down to 20 minutes. He's averaging 17-7 on 53% shooting. He's just not an efficient shooter at all. 43% last year, 42 the year before that, 43 the year before that, 43 the year before that. There is a clear pattern. He won't continue to be a 50% plus 3-point shooter. The minutes will drop and his overall production is going to dip, and he won't remain a top 50 guy or a top 100 guy probably. PJ Tucker, the 54th ranked player, his numbers, I guess, can be considered relatively sustainable. No crazy shooting numbers, 40% from three, only 37% from the field. But 2.5 steals is a pretty high number to go along with 2-3. So I think there is an element of regression there with PJ. He still probably should be a 12-team league player. Like, I'd have him ahead of, say, Marcus Morris, who I just mentioned. But I think we have to look at those steal numbers and expect a level of regression. We are a fair way. He's never really been this level of producer historically, although his season in Toronto wasn't too far off. But this is a really elevated number from PJ over the last couple of weeks. De'Aaron Fox is the 62nd ranked player over the last 2 weeks. I think Fox is overperforming at the moment, and it all comes down to, let's look at the shooting numbers. 43% from three, 50% from two, and 48% overall from the field. Now, Fox has taken significant improvements. I'm just not sure that his ability to hit mid-range shots has improved to this level. He won't drop much necessarily, but if you're looking at these numbers and going, well, he's a second-year guy, he probably will improve from here, I think you'll be disappointed, and I think you'll see some of that efficiency drop from Fox. He's averaging 18, 4.5, and 7.5, which are numbers which could be sustainable, but will the 48% from the field keep up? That's probably the area where you need to pay attention. Shelvin Mack is the 64th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. 26 minutes, 14 points with 4.5 assists. And of course, he's shooting 60% from the field and 53% from three. That will not stick. He has some weird value at the moment that is just not going to last. And I don't think I need to explain too much more about that. Ersan Ilyasova, the 71st ranked player at the moment, 58% shooting, including 75% on twos, not going to stick. And this is more for people who go and look at rankings and go, well, he's 71st player, mate, has to be rostered. Well, there are certain reasons for it, and that's great if you can go back in time to 2 weeks ago, grab Ersan Ilyasova and get the 71st ranked player. But looking at it in historical context, in 22 minutes per night, is he going to be able to maintain it? The answer is almost definitely no. Will he continue to shoot 75% from two? The answer is 100% no. So the numbers are going to dip there. And it's not like he's buoyed by these other big, strong performances in other areas. It is really coming from that inflated field goal percentage. And Carmelo Anthony, the last guy I want to talk about, the 75th ranked guy over the last 2 weeks, 18 points in the 6 games, 32 minutes a night, shooting the ball decently well, 42% from three, averaging 5 rebounds with a block per game, which on the surface you can go, well, that's not completely unsustainable, but he looks lost. And with players returning from for the Rockets now, the good play of the Comet Gary Clark, I'm not sure Melo is going to even get 32 minutes per night, or even the level of shot attempts that he's getting at the moment. So I think he is going to dip outside the top 100 pretty consistently. Find the Melo lover in your league, find the casual in your league, and try and offer him up and see if you can get back some sort of top 100 player. So if you can get Gordon Hayward back, look at an overperforming player, try an underperforming. Get Jingle and Joe, get Otto Porter. Maybe it works. Most times it won't, but see how you go by trying to deal Melo to someone who may be going on brand recognition only. Let's move on and talk some of the old DFS. Now, we've got a 10-game slate to preview, but before we do that, let's talk about the perfect lineup starting on DraftKings. Chris Middleton, 42.5. CJ McCollum, 59.25. Marvin Williams, 34. The pencil Harrison Barnes, 45.25. Brookie Lopez, 33.5. Kemba had 48.75. And Otto Porter had 44.5. Add in John Wall at 53.5, and that totaled 361.25 for a total of $49,900. And on FanDuel, Kemba 47.1, Johnny Wall 53.8, Middleton 39.6, McCollum 59, Porter 45.7. That's what I've seen lately. A lot of people abbreviating Otto Porter to OPJ, and it just bothers me a lot, and I don't know why that abbreviation it shits me a lot. And I know that people are doing it because of Odell Beckham Jr. and it goes the OB. I don't know. It just shits me. For no reason, feel free to keep doing it. I just hate the OPJ moniker, whatever you want to say. The pencil, 43.1. Marvin Williams, 32.1. Rashawn Holmes, 32. And Jared Allen, 33.3 for a total of 385.7. That costs $59,700 dues. Let's look at these games now, focusing on the old FanDuel for today's ones, mainly Detroit at Orlando. The Pistons are favored by 1.5, and the total is 212.5. Reggie Bullock and Evan Fournier are both questionable with ankle sprains. John Isaac is doubtful with an ankle sprain. We already know that the Duck, Luke Kennard, is out. The point guards, Ish Smith's at 4,600. It's been underwhelming from Ish lately. The matchup is okay without being spectacular. I think you can probably do better than Ish in this slate. DJ Augustin and Jaren Grant, two also sub $5,000 point guards. Not a huge amount of interest in either of those guys. While Reggie Jackson, he got it lit last game. 39 points, $6,000 for Reg. He'd be the one guy out of this quartet of point guards that I'd be considering, but even then, not a strong one. Terry Ross, I love at 4,800. No Isaac, potentially no Fournier. He's a guy that can really go off it and get you a 30. And at 4,800 with this big opportunity, I like it. Reggie Bullock at 43 doesn't interest me. And Fournier at 6,200. He'd been consistent prior to the injury. He still might be consistent after the injury, but he's been consistent, 34-point average over his last three, which is fine. I just think there are better options out there on this slate. Well, Langston Galloway exploded for 42 points last time. If Bullock is out, he at $4,000 would be worth looking at. He played 55 combined minutes in the two games that Bullock has missed, so there is some upside there in using Galloway if that is what goes on. The little dog, Glenn Robinson III, started last game for Stan Johnson, 3,800, 25 points. I'll take that equation every day of the week. And it wasn't like that game he came out and just racked up huge amounts of numbers. It was just a solid type performance, which is what you're looking for out of a guy at 3,800. So I think he's okay, assuming he starts over Stan Johnson. Well, Johnny Simmons at 4,000, averages 26 against the Pistons. It came in 34 minutes, but he might have an opportunity to get to that if Fournier is out. So a tournament type guy. As Gordon at 8,100, average of 44 against the Pistons, which is interesting. A couple of strong games in a row for Azza, but I don't think 8,100 is the best price. 9,600 for Blake Griffin, who is just dropping 50s like they're going out of fashion. I don't really see the Magic being in a great position to be able to slow him down, so I'm fine with using Blake Griffin. And then we've got Vucevic, Bamba, and Drummond as your centers. 8,800 for Vuce, 9,600 for Drummond, and 4,800 for Bamba. Not really much appeal on the Magic side of things. Drummond at 9,600, coming off a 60-pointer, which is a 2020 game. There's something there for Drummo, but not looking too closely at the Magic guys. Let's look on DraftKings to see if there's anything I like. Gordon at 7,000 is in a much better spot, so I like that for DraftKings. Jaren Grant at 36 is your tournament-y type weirdo. Well, I don't know why I called him a weirdo. And Blakey Griffin at 9,900, I think, is a pretty strong cash guy over on the old DK. Let's go to the next one. The Thunder and the Cavs. There's no spread. There's no total. There's also no Westbrook, and there is no idea for the Cleveland Cavaliers. We don't know who will start. Will it be Channing Frye? Will it be Larry Nance? Will it be David Nwaba? Will it be the Plumber? So many weird things. Will it be Chetty Osman? And they go with a three-wing lineup and put maybe Jordan Clarkson into the starting lineup, maybe Kyle Korver into the starting lineup. There are options there that don't include Nance. And when you've got four options of the ways they can go, and one of them involves Nance, I'll lean the 75% of the other ones, which is what I actually think will go on with this team. As I said, no Westbrook with the ankle sprain, so Dennis Schroeder's going to get the start. He's listed as a shooting guard, so of course we love him at 6,400. Really, really strong cash play. Let's look at the other point guards, though. Georgie Hill's at 54. He's coming off a 46-pointer against Orlando. He hit 90% of his shots or thereabouts in that game, so that's probably unrealistic, but I don't mind George Hill in this one if they are going to leave heavily on the veterans, especially with Colin Sexton sucking. But Larry Drew did say, probably made a mistake not playing Sexton enough, so maybe we could see Sexo's minutes pushing back up. But I still think Hill is okay here. As for Sexton at 4,000, it could be an interesting contrarian low roster percentage option at that 4,000 if they do indeed push his minutes back up, but he's just not good. Shooting guards, I love Schroeder there. Jordy Clarkson and Rocket Rodney Hood, 47 and 5,100, really just tournament options, but an opportunity could arise for these guys, especially if they do go with the Osman at power forward lineup. And Abrines at 38, playing pretty well, Alex Abrines, and an opportunity now for some extra usage and minutes with Schroeder playing exclusively as a one, opening up some minutes at the two, and we know that Terrence Ferguson's not going to do anything with those minutes. So I think Abrines is a tournament type of a guy. The plumber, J.R. Smith, strong numbers, 22 average over the last three. I think that that Smith at 4,500 is okay to look at, and that's, I didn't think I'd be saying that this season at all. Osman's at 5,900. Many of you will have a zero interest in using Osman, fair enough. I still think that he's in tournament play, whereas Paul George at 10-2 is strong for cash. I really like Paul George in this matchup. The power forwards, Nance is at 4,800. I don't know how you can have any faith in that, but that might mean that the roster percentage is like well down 5%. And you could get lucky if it does work out. Well, Jez Grant at 5,400 has been playing relatively well. I think that that's some okay cash value for him. The centers, Stephen Adams, 7,400, has really done well against Tristan Thompson in the past. A 45-point average. No reason he can't get that again. So I like Adams here. Noel, I don't. Well, Thompson, who's coming off his own 44-point performance against the Magic, I'm not sure that Adams is going to allow that. He has averaged 18 points the last three times against the Thunder in 27 minutes per game. And I think 18 points from Thompson is more realistic as opposed to the 44 that he had against the Magic. So he is in pretty strong fade territory, in my opinion. On DraftKings, Hill at 4,000, that's really good. I love that price for Georgie Hill. Steve Adams at 64, I love. And Paulie George at 91. Of course, we've got Schroeder at 69 and Chetty Osman for your tournaments at 52. Abrines at 35, also looking pretty strong. And most of those other flyer types that I mentioned hold true for DraftKings as well as on FanDuel. The New York Knicks and the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks on a back-to-back. We don't know the status of the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, who missed today's game. The Knicks are favored by 1 point on the road. The total is 222.5.
Two for 2-2-2.
David Fizdale's rotations are all over the place. I don't know what we're going to expect. Will we get 29 minutes of Mitch Robinson? Will we get 16 minutes? What's Frank Ntilikina going to do? Is Emmanuel Mudiay going to dominate? Are we going to get Mario Hezonja? Will we get more than 5 minutes of the Fort Kevin Knox? Literally no idea what Fizdale's going to do, because if we're really being honest, just between you and me, he doesn't know what he's going to do either. He's all over the place in terms of committing to anything. Frank Ntilikina at 4,900. Really hard to use him considering how poor he has been. Lin at 3,800. He's going to play. He's giving you value pretty much every night. Back against the Knicks. He's one of his former teams, if you want to believe in revenge games. But 23 points average over the last three. 26 today for Lin at 3,800. I'm here for that. That is a fine floor cash play type of guy. In order for you to stash up with Embiid or Davis or any of these other big guys, the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard, for example. Trae Young's at 7,600. Young only had 25 points last time out against the Knicks. He can be better than that. I think he is a 30-point floor guy, but 7,600, I'd want a little bit higher of a floor there. And then shooting guards. We don't know the status of Timmy Hardaway, who's dealing with that back issue. If he is out, Alonzo Trier hasn't met a shot he didn't want to take. He had 33 last game, and at 4,200, I'd be locking him into cash if Hardaway is out. If Hardaway plays, a little bit harder to rely upon Trier at this point. Bazemore at 6,700 had a really nice performance today. I'd lock him in if Prince is out. Otherwise, I'd fade. As for Taurean at 6,800, the numbers have been disappointing, and I'd only consider him tournament worthy. Same with DeAndre Bembry at 4,900. For the power forwards, the Fort, Kevin Knox is at 3,900. Do we get 5 minutes of Kevin Knox, or does he push to 25? I think if we get to 25 minutes here, he can get 20 points, and that would give you nice value at 39. So a nice tournament guy, drop your lower score on FanDuel. I think there is something there for the Fort. Well, that could impact Noah Vonleh, who's been putting up some okay numbers, but foul trouble has bothered him. 5,300, I'm not sure the ceiling is really high enough on Vonleh, while the wizard Omari Spellman is starting for the Hawks. He's not really doing much with those starts. Mitch Robinson, 4,500. We can only really rely upon him. That's not true. I can rely upon him to start a game. I can't rely upon anything else. But there is tournament upside there. While Len and The Undertaker are hard to really roster in DFS. And Enes Kanter at 7,300. Killed it last game. Are we getting 20-minute Enes Kanter or are we getting 40-minute Enes Kanter? Again, absolutely no idea what to expect out of Fizdale because he doesn't know what he's doing. On to the, and I don't mean he doesn't know what he's doing, and that's still up in the air. I mean, he literally doesn't know what he's going to be doing from day to day. On DraftKings, Bazemore, I really like at 5,700. I think Leonard at 45 is a GPP guy. The Fort at 38, Kevin Knox, has that value, as does formerly at 59, if Prince happens to be ruled into play. 5,900 for Taurean Prince would be a pretty sexy price tag. Let's go on to the next one. We're looking at the Spurs and the Heat. No spread, no total, because there is no Hassan Whiteside news. He is questionable. Rudy Gay and Pau Gasol are out for the Spurs, while Derek White, as I mentioned earlier, he is probable to make his season debut. The Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, point guard, 6,600. A strong game from Dragic last time out, 38 points. Not really feeling the matchup here too highly for him. The Spurs have still been pretty good defending point guards. I think that there are better options out there. Derek White at 37, if you want to get wild, why not? We just don't know what we're going to get out of him. Some people may not even know that he's back. I just don't think that we're going to be getting 25 out of him. But he also takes the value away from Bryn Forbes and from Pat Mills. Shooting guards. Wade, 5,100. A weirdly great record against the Spurs. 34-point average the last three times in only 27 minutes. That is something to pay some attention to for Wado. So I think you should have a bit of a squiz at him, but nothing more than a tournament look. Scooter Magruder's at 51, bit high, while DeRozan at 92 has struggled as a member of the Raptors against the Heat. A 35-point average only. A new dimension to his game with the passing and rebounding this season, but 9,200 maybe feels a bit high, but I don't hate the matchup. The Heat haven't been great. Now, in terms of matchup, I don't like his past record against Miami, but in terms of Miami this season, they have been someone who has been pretty liberal in giving away numbers to the shooting guard position. Joshy Richardson, just killing it, 7,600 with a 40-point average over the last three. Let's go back on Josh. I'm really, really keen on what he's doing. He is getting so much usage. While minimum salary Davis Bertans may get another start, or it might be Jakob Poeltl, but Bertans at 3,500 with no Pau Gasol around, as well as no Rudy Gay, is worth the GPP look, but that's probably it. Dante Cunningham, no, and Justice Winslow. Two strong games in a row for Justice. He is at 5,700, which is high. But if Whiteside is out, then that does give him a boost. Of course, if Whiteside is out, we're looking pretty strongly at Bam Adebayo at 5,600. But if Hassan plays, then that is a terrible, terrible option. And FanDuel's bumped his price pretty aggressively that even if Whiteside plays a lot of the value does disappear. Poeltl, Whiteside, Olynyk, I'm not really feeling any of those guys as supreme options. On DraftKings, there's not much that really stands out here. You could look at Bertans at 3,200 as an upsidey guy, almost minimum as a potential or a likely starter. I think there's something there in Bertans, but we'd be looking at Adebayo if Whiteside's out. 7,700 for Joshy Richardson, so probably pushing a little bit too high, and there are better guys around on DraftKings than Richardson, despite how well he has been playing. The Indiana Pacers are 2.5-point favorites over the Philadelphia 76ers. The total is 216. The Sixers have not won a game on the road this season. They're on the road here. Brett Brown talking about potentially removing Markelle Fultz from the starting lineup, so let's see how that goes. Injury-wise, Mike Muscala is doubtful. Wilson Chandler should be back. Bob Covington is questionable with that back. Now, if Covington is out, I'd look for more Landry Shamet to come in there. You're going to have the old baby neck Wilson Chandler for his second game of the season. A bit more of a reliance upon Dario Saric, I would imagine, in that situation as well. the point guards, Collison, 5,000, no. Corey Joseph, 3,700, also no. While Ben Simmons at 9,500 has been dropping off in his production lately. He did have a 46-pointer last time, which is a step in the right direction, but I think there are better ways around it there. While minimum salary is Landry Shamet. I think that would be tournament, but it's pretty bottom of the barrel type stuff with Shamet or Shamet there. Can't get that right. Shooting guard, JJ Redick, 5,200. Dropped off a bit, was red hot to start the season. Not really sure I'm feeling too much about him there. Fultz at 48, that's hard to go with. While Oladipo at 8,900. Vic averaged 40 against the Sixers last season, which is pretty strong. And at 8,900, it's there or thereabouts. I think that he is worthwhile looking at, but there are better stud type options on FanDuel on this slate for Wednesday. Covington's at 6,300, a pretty good record against Indiana and a significant price drop. The injury is the concern, so you'd only want to use him for tournaments. Tyreek, Boyan, no. Babyneck Wilson-Chandler's at 3,600. I think that he is a sneaky tournament guy here. If Covington's out, there is an opportunity, but he really isn't that good, so he's nowhere near a cash lock. Šarić at 4,700 has been piss poor, we know that, but this is an opportunity for him to right those wrongs if those injuries actually do keep Covington out. So something to bear in mind while Sabonis is crushing, 6,100 for DeMontis. He feels like a fairly solid cash floor type of a guy at his position with how well he's playing. Thaddeus Young at 59, you can do better. And then the centers, Miles Turner or Joel Embiid. Turner is down to 5,500 for good reason, you can do better than that. While Embiid at 11,300. Last game was a little bit disappointing against the Nets, only 38 points, but we know he is a 50-point type guy. So I think at 11-3, you should feel pretty good. I'd feel better about using Embiid than I would about Ben Simmons in those upper price reaches. On DraftKings, Embiid at 11-4 is good, and Šarić at 48, still that upside type of a play over there. Oladipo at 87, not quite as strong as what he might be over on FanDuel. Let's go to the next game now. We're looking at the Chicago Bulls and the New Orleans Pelicans. The Pelicans are favored by 10. The total is 230.5. The Pelicans have lost 5 in a row. They're looking to break that streak. Lord Alfred Payton is questionable to return to action, so that's good news if he is back, because if he is out, they have been struggling quite a bit. Payton's at 6,900, has had a real history of really giving it to the Bulls and giving it to them hard with a 43-point average the last three times. At 6,900, they're going to welcome him back in. I think he'll be fine. He won't be on a minutes limit. I think that there is some tournament value there. Archer Jack and Owen Payne, no. Shooting guard, Justin Holiday, 5,200, going up against his brother. He want to go, brotherly revenge game, maybe. He's been consistently around that 24 mark, which isn't quite there, but it's not a bad floor for cash. We know the minutes will be fine. While Drew is killing it, 8,800 for Drew Holiday. The return of Alfred doesn't really worry me too much because he's still going to get his shots. He's still going to do what he does. His lowest score in his last five, Drew Holiday, is 40 points. So that just shows you just how consistent he has been. And Zach LaVine, $9,000. I would take Drew over Zach, save my $200, but LaVine is killing it. Had 59 points against the Knicks in that double overtime game. But prior to that, the numbers had been a little bit down with only an average of 42 over his last three, which isn't going to cut it at a $9,000 price mark. And Drew Holiday is obviously a very, very good defender. Antonio Blakeney gets his shots off at 3,800. That's a tournament type of a guy. Jabari Parker, the minutes are there. The production is terrible, but at 6,800, I think you do have to include it in a tournament pool. Etuan Moore, you don't. And Nick Mirotic at 8,400, just another real consistent guy whose lowest score over his last five has been 40, and that's some games with Tone Davis and some games without him. Wesley Johnson, Chandler Hutchinson, no thank you. Power forward, Anthony Davis facing his hometown team, the Chicago Bulls. He averages 56 against the Bulls the last three times out, 11,800. Struggled last game, just the 29 points, but he's averaging 51 over his last five. He's got that 80-point upside, so you definitely lean towards him in tournaments. Maybe you're a bit scared off in cash, but I think he's still worthwhile. That is a nice price. He's more of a 12-4 guy than an 11-8, so when you get that 11-8 option, I think you do have to steer towards it. Wendell Carter Jr., the Block Panther, 7,400, just putting up numbers consistently with a 41 average over the last five, but does the Anthony Davis factor get him into foul trouble like we saw last game. I still think he's okay to use, but not a high priority. Then you got Julius Randle at 7,200, which I don't really see the Bulls being able to stop what he can do. It's just going to be minutes for Randle. 45 last game was pretty good, not minutes, points. Not fully into him there. And of course, Felizio. Nobody should ever be fully into Cristiano Felizio. On DraftKings, Jabari at 58 and Alfred at 54 are strong tournament plays. Peyton at 54, especially if he plays. Well, Davis at 11.5, I do really like that for cash. And Justin Holiday at 47. There's a little bit there for Justin Holiday on DraftKings. Let's look at the next game, the Nuggets and the Grizzlies. The Nuggets on the road, killing it. Only 3.5-point favorites over the Grizzlies. That's interesting. Does Vegas know something I don't? The total is 206, so a low total. And Nikola Jokic has been struggling, not getting many field goal attempts. Will he be able to actually crack 5 in this game? He's getting numbers, but he's just not getting the shot attempts. It's going to be interesting to see. Chandler Parsons is out for the Grizzlies. Dylan Brooks is listed as probable. Shelvin Mack is listed as probable as well with groin issues. Mack has been playing fairly well recently too. Let's talk point guards. Conley at 7,300. A little bit of a down stretch lately, but has done very well against Denver in the past. I'm happy to go here on Conley at that $7,300 price tag. I think it's a pretty good option. While the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray at 77. Price has gone up because of that 55 he dropped against Boston. I would much rather take Conley at $400 cheaper than expecting Murray to go out there and do that again. Well, Shelvin Mack, I don't know what's going on here. 29 points for Mack, average over the last five. At $5,200, the salary's increased. I would not feel great about putting Shelvin Mack into a DFS lineup at $5,200. I'll tell you now. Same as I wouldn't feel great about putting Garrett Temple in at $4,200, but I feel like Temple's got an ability to actually get to that floor level, whereas I'm not sure Mack can do that. Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
7,000 for Gaz. The shot just isn't falling at the right level. I think there are better shooting guards out there, but far from a terrible option. Malik Beasley, Marshawn Brooks, they're terrible options. Small forward, I think Wancho's going to start for the Nuggets. 3,900 for Hernan Gomez. He's not a big scoring guy, but still averaging 23 over the last three games at 3,900. You'd have to take that. And then Kyle Anderson at 4,800. Scored 5 points last game, but 28 FanDuel points. That is what he can do, contribute across the box score. I think that at 4,800, he's got that chance for 26 or 27 or 30 or 32 if he has a 12-point scoring night. But I'm not thinking that's a lock for cash by any means. Power forward, Triple J, 5,900. Stayed out of foul trouble, dropped 38. That's the upside, so I love him for a tournament option. While Trey Lyles at 48 and Paul Millsap at 6,000, they don't really get it going for me. Centers, Nick Jokic, 9,200. Only a 30-point average over the last three. Has struggled in the past with Marc Gasol. The shot attempts are down. I think I would look at him as a tournament guy because I think his percentage will be well down, but not feeling super confident there. With Marc Gasol at 8,000, I think that's too highly priced for Gasol. On to DraftKings, Triple J and Wancho as your nice tournament guys. Kyle Anderson at 41 as well. And then Gaz Harris down to 6,000. That price appeals, as does Mike Conley at 73 and Jokic at 89 again. But still with that element of concern with what's happening with Jokic at the moment. The Dallas Mavericks, the Utah Jazz, the Jazz are on a back-to-back. Donovan Mitchell has been upgraded to probable, so he is likely to go. The Jazz need to turn things around. This is a great opportunity against the Mavericks team off a big win against the Wizards, but they should be able to cover them off here and on that back-to-back as well. Devin Harris will be out for the Mavericks. At point guard, ravishing Rick Rubio, 6,500. I don't feel any confidence in that. And Dennis Smith at 6,200. He had 34 today. That's nice. I think he is a more reliable option than what Rubio is, given their respective prices. Exum, I think we can fade. JJ Barea, the same. At shooting guard, the Don, 8,500. His price is low across a lot of DFS sites. I think it's pretty low here in a matchup which should really suit Mitchell. A 40-point performance, I think, is a realistic expectation for Don Mitchell here against the Mavericks. So with him likely to play, I'd be happy to use him. Wes Matthews at 5,200 has been shooting well, but he's not translating into DFS points. Played well today, but still just 24 points. And that's what he seems to give you most nights, which at 5,200, I think I can do better. Luka Doncic at 7,800, just giving you 35 a night. Again, not quite high enough. The price is a little bit too high. And on a back-to-back, I think I'd leave that alone. The pencil Harrison Barnes at 51 crushed it today. I feel pretty good about him beating the value at 5,100, so he's in play. And Jingle and Joe at 6,000. Slump for Joe. It's going to turn around. Will it be this game? That's the big question. I feel like I think there's a real chance that Ingles can come out and drop a 35 or drop a 36 type point performance. Jay Crowder at 5,300 stunk it up, and I think he can also come out and provide value at that $5,300 mark. The power forward, you're looking at Derek Favors, who exceeded value last game but had been struggling prior. I don't hate it at 5,100. The upside, I think, is relatively limited, but a 25 or 26 point floor is not outrageous. And then at center, DeAndre Jordan, Rudy Gobert. I'll fade Jordan going up against Gobert. As for Gobert at 8,900, I think that's probably a little bit too expensive for Rudy heading into this one. There are probably going to be better center options out there rather than him. Let's look at DraftKings. I love the Don over there, 7,400. DeAndre at 7.3 is an appealing price, as is Dennis Smith at 55. I really love Smith at that salary. He crushed it in today's game at that similar sort of price point. Let's go on to the next game. We're rounding this one up for the day. The Toronto Raptors and the Sacramento Kings. Of course, we don't know the status of Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
Yes, the fun guy Kawhi Leonard is questionable. And on Sacramento's side, Bogdan Bogdanovic has been upgraded to questionable. Fred VanVleet is at 4,700, coming off a 29-pointer in a blowout. And this has got blowout risk written all over it. So be really weary about using a lot of the players in this game, because both of these coaches, when the game gets out of hand, they will just pull guys and pull them off really early.
Giggity!
Lowry is crushing 8,800. He's giving you 40 almost every night. I think there's a solid value in him. And De'Aaron Fox at 8,000. I think that might be a bit high for Foxy, to be honest. Pretty solid numbers, but I don't want to be spending 8,000 on De'Aaron Fox just at this point. I'm not ready to rely upon him there. The shooting guards, Dan Green's at 5,000, only tournaments for him, while Budrick Hield, 7,700. I think that might be pushing a bit hard for Budrick, especially against the defense, the caliber of the Toronto Raptors. I wouldn't use Bogdan to begin at 4,800. Shumpert doesn't do much for me either. Leonard is at 10,100, which is nice for a high-profile guy, but again, the risk that he doesn't play and the risk that this is a 20-point game sometime in the third quarter is significant to me. While Bielitsa at 6,700, that's a reason why I fade most of this game, because Dave Yeager is just going to pull these guys. If the game's out of hand in the third quarter, and I'm not trying to disparage the Kings, but the Raptors are one of the best three teams in the NBA, this could get out of hand, and the Kings have had their ass kicked a few times. They've had some big wins, but the games they lose, they get destroyed, and I think that's a real risk here. At power forward, Bagley is at 5,000. I think that makes him a tournament guy, because he is that one who comes in the blowouts and can put up some garbage time numbers and could get you a 32-pointer. So I think he is in tournament play. Serge Ibaka, eventually he's going to miss. I think he's 25 of his last 27. He's going to miss at some point. The matchup against Willie Cauley-Stein favors him over Jonas Valanciunas, so I expect a boost in his minutes, but I'm not sure at 6,200 there's really all that much value. Well, Pascal Siakam, if Kawhi Leonard is out, then Siakam at 58 is strong. If Leonard is in, I don't like it. But even with how much we've all been flating Siakam, he still only had 28 points last game in 31 minutes, which at 5,800 is right on the nose of where it needs to be. So I'm not sure that there's massive, huge, huge upside for Siakam. Again, if Leonard's out, I do like it though. And then at center, Cauley-Stein at 71 hasn't been getting to that level. And Valanciunas, I think this might be a stretch for him at 6,000, despite him just putting up unbelievably beastly numbers in his limited minutes. On to the DraftKings, I think Fox at 6,300, that's a much more reasonable price. So I'm in on Fox there. But overall, this is a real fadeable game to me, given the nature of the potential blowout here. Let's go on to the last game of the day. It's the Minnesota Timberwolves against the Los Angeles Lakers. No spread here for this one either. I guess they're just the unknowns with what Jimmy Butler's going to do. We haven't heard any news. Jeff Teague is out.
My name is Jeff.
So we're probably going to get a big dose of Derrick Rose there. I love Rose at 5,500. That's super strong value. I think he should be almost the first guy you put into your cash lineup unless his ankle flares up. Lonzo at 57 is risky, but he is still an upside guy who has got 40-point potential. Happy with him in a tournament, but that's about it. Rondo, yeah, Tyus Jones, not really feeling either of those guys. The hitman Josh Hart is a no for me, and Jim Butler at 92, I don't know if he's going to play. I don't know how much effort he's going to give. Half-ass, full-ass, quarter-ass. I don't know what sort of effort Butler's going to give. So it puts him really into the tournament mold, and that's really it. Well, Josh Okogie at 5,000 would be someone. He had 38 points against the Lakers earlier this season. If Butler does sit, and I think he'll still be in the rotation, but if Butler's out, he's 30 minutes. If Butler's in, he's 20 minutes. And 30 minutes makes him useful. 20 minutes at 5,000, there's no way. The small forwards, Wigo is at 6,400. No. LeBron James.
LeBron James.
11,200 for LeBronald. I think this is got 55 written all over it. Happy to use LeBron in this one. And then we go to the power forwards. Brandon Ingram's at 5,900. The price is coming way down for Ingram because he is struggling. Therefore, I think this makes him a nice tournament guy to have a look at. Get back on track, get a 35, get a 40 pointer. Not likely to happen, but there's still a decent possibility. The future MVP at 6,300, Kyle Kuzma. I would take Ingram over him any day of the week, especially with that $400 discount. Taj Gibson, not for me. Towns is getting it rolling. He's at 9,400. Lakers get big men back into action, so I do like Towns here. If Butler misses, I love Towns even more, and he would become a super strong cash play. But he killed the Lakers out the last time that they played well. JaVale at 7,500. That might be just getting a little bit too pricey for McGee. At this stage, Tyson Chandler also going to make his season debut, but I wouldn't have thought that using him in DFS is going to be viable. On DraftKings, Rose at 56, the same story. LeBron at 11,000, we like. Townsend, Butler, Brandon Ingram down to 57. Lonzo Ball at 52. The pricing on DraftKings fairly closely marries up to how it looks over on FanDuel. Let's round it out, looking through the studs and values. On DraftKings, Paulie George at 91, and your value play is George Hill at 4,000. On FanDuel, Tone Davis, 11.8, and your value play is Derrick Rose at 55. On Yahoo, your stud is Paul George at 40, and your value is Kyle Anderson, minimum $10. Moneyball, we've got Tone Davis at 11.9 as the stud, and your value is Derrick Rose at 5'8". And on DraftStars, Paulie George, 16.5 4.0 is your stud, and your value is Jabari Parker at 9.3 5.0. The best bet for today, I think, is the Nuggets at -3.5 against the Grizzlies. Maybe Vegas knows something I don't. We will see how that goes. Subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Thumbs up, comment, 5-star reviews, you know the drill. Go follow the Locked On NBA Net handle on Twitter and on Instagram, and follow me on Instagram at Locked On Fantasy Basketball. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Terry Stotts.